Good morning. Welcome to Mountain Money on a snowy, well, now it's blowing sideways, snowy morning. This is Larry Warren along with Doug Wells, and some challenging conditions out there this morning. I think I skidded for the first time all year. I went around a corner and kept the rear end broke away. And
be careful on the roads. This is not up to Park City's normal road grooming standards.
No, in fact, Sweet Alley hadn't been plowed. Has it been plowed yet? Nope. Once through now. So it's slippery out there, but I've checked Utah Commuter Link, and roads are fine going to Salt Lake.
That's the way it should be.
The main arteries are just fine, but be careful out there. So this morning, our guests include Jordan Goodman, and Jordan Goodman is known as America's Money Answers Man. That may be his title, but he's certainly got credentials. He's been on the staff of Money Magazine for 18 years. He's written 14 books.
He's on television a lot
as an expert, and he's on KPCW Mountain Money this morning, and he's standing by, and he's a fan of Park City also.
Well, great. There's a lot to like, and we're interested in learning more about some of his thoughts. And then, Larry, we've had Bill Brunson on from the Internal Revenue Service in the past. He's going to come in and talk to us, tell us a little bit about some tax scams, as well as talk about the new filing system and things we need to look for this year. And then our final guest is going to be Linda Albert. She is the owner of Mindful Cuisine. And that is a place you can learn to do some cooking, and Mindful Cuisine also offers small group catering. So we're going to find out more about her business, you can imagine. This is a good town to have a catering business in, particularly this time of year. So you're listening to Mountain Money on KPCW. We've got a great show this morning. Stay tuned. We'll be back in a moment.
Support for KPCW comes from Crandall Capital with New Park Town Center. With urban amenities and services and home to restaurants, shops, entertainment, lodging, and residences. More information about New Park Town Center at 801-303-5440. Support for KPCW comes from Crandall Capital with New Park Town Center. With urban amenities and services and home to restaurants, shops, entertainment, lodging, and residences. More information about New Park Town Center at 801-303-5440.
And welcome back to Mountain Money. We have Jordan Goodman on the line from the East Coast, I believe. And Jordan, I also forgot to mention that you also worked for Marketplace, which we broadcast daily here on our station. It comes from NPR, and it's a great show. Well,
great.
Where do we begin with the new administration?
The world has changed. The world has changed dramatically. It is changing in front of us. And so I want your listeners to be able to take advantage of it and not suffer from it, because they're going to be huge winners and losers with everything that's going on in the markets and politically. Tomorrow night, President Trump's going to have his first State of the Union address, and it's almost as though the last 8 years are going to be completely reversed in every area.
So, well, that's what it sounds like. The first details are leaking out of that speech. I'm sure much to the chagrin of who, but a $54 billion increase in defense spending and cuts in social spending and regulation enforcement like environmental stuff and
right.
All
kinds of things eliminated. He's going to eliminate the National Endowment of the Arts and Humanities completely, cut back dramatically on the Environmental Protection Agency. In the consumer area, the so-called CFPB, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, which was formed by Dodd-Frank in 2010, it may not be eliminated, but it's going to be downsized and defanged dramatically, I think would be a way to put that. In every area, labor, environmental, health, energy, trade. I mean, everything literally that's happened the last 8 years is going to be reversed here.
And Jordan, it's one of those things that for late night comedy shows and for radio talk shows, we could talk about the new policies and the pros and cons of that all day long. But this is a show on business, this is a show on money and investing, and you're very well known for that. And so I want to take advantage of the opportunity since we have you here on air. And,
great.
And, you know, one of the things that I think Larry mentioned, Marketplace, I think one of the things that makes Marketplace the great show that it is it's very approachable. And I've seen you on television as well, and your advice is very approachable. And so I want to start off, you've written 14 books on money management and financial aspects. I want to start off with the basics because I think that's so important for most people. You know, give us some advice. What does the average person need to know about building their nest egg that maybe they don't know?
Setting up habits, I think, is the best way to put it. Investing and having your money grow is not an event; it's a habit. Okay, people think, "Oh, well, when I win the lottery, or when I get an inheritance, or when something happens, then I'll start investing." It's like, no, it doesn't work that way. If you don't invest for yourself, it's not going to happen. I mean, just to give you a simple example, 401ks, a lot of people have 401ks at work in a for-profit company, 403bs in a not-profit, 457 plans in a government plan. If you don't sign up for it, nothing's going to accumulate. And about 70% of the people that are offered it do sign up, and 30% who are offered it do not sign up. So they end up with nothing come retirement times. So it seems like a simple thing to do, but a lot of people don't do it. And particularly if you're being matched, I mean, my basic principle of personal finance is never refuse free money if it's given to you. I would hope you'd agree with that one, Doug.
Yeah, absolutely. And let's talk about, you know, it's important to start saving. The 401k plan is a great plan. A lot of people don't have access to it. So when should people start their savings habit? I like that term, habit, and I agree with you.
Well,
I think that's
certainly
important.
A 401k, the first day you start your job is a good place to start right there. And check these things out. I've done a lot of seminars in companies, and they get these brochures and whatever. They may have a little seminar or something, but, you know, they put them in their drawer and they don't look at it for 40 years. And then they say, I guess I should have done that. You know, it's like, no, start it from the first. And your younger years, meaning 20s, 30s, 40s, put it in the most aggressive options because you have a wonderful asset on your side, which is time, time for the money to be working. And if it goes down for even a year or two, in the long run, it'll go back up. And you're doing what's called dollar cost averaging. You're buying every paycheck. And when the prices of what you're buying are higher, you buy less. When the prices are lower, you buy more, which is opposite of what you do psychologically.
Yeah, no, it's really hard.
When it's up.
And yeah, it's really hard.
Go the other direction when it's down.
Yeah,
right?
It's really, when it comes to your money, it's really hard, right? It's the exact reverse. In fact, there's many different studies. You're probably familiar with Dalbar that studies how people do choosing their own investments in 401ks. And for the money that they choose to have exposed to equities, to stocks, they generally get about half of the return of the market because of exactly what you just said there, Jordan. It's that fear of loss. That causes people, and it's also greed on the upside, changing their allocation.
And right now,
at
we're in greed mode.
Yeah, we very well may be.
A spectrum between greed and fear. When President Obama came in, we were in total fear. It turns out the market bottomed in March 2009, soon after he got in. That was a great time to buy, but everybody was running for the exits because they thought the apocalypse was near. And now we're in total greed mode, where we have the Dow and the S&P and the NASDAQ have hit all-time record highs for the last 11 days straight, which is the first time that's happened since 1987. So we're, and I think it's just the beginning. So we're in greed mode right now, which is easy to invest when things are going up, and it's hard to invest when things go down. But you remember the old buy low, sell high thing? It works much better than buy high, sell low, which is what most people end up doing. So
indeed,
by having an automatic system, it works, is what I'm saying. You take the emotion out of it. You know?
And, you know, you when you talked about 401ks and the day to start is day one, I remember so well a conversation I had with I used to be in TV news and driving around with a photographer who I know didn't have two dimes to rub together. He had an old crummy car, lived in a crummy apartment, and we were talking about the 401k that had just been rolled out at the company we worked for, and he said, I'm not spending a dime on that. And I said, I had no idea you were that wealthy. And he laughed and said, "I'm not." And I said, "Well, you're turning. The company's trying to give you $3,000. They're trying.
Right.
They want to give you $3,000, and you're saying no." And
exactly. He was on the 30% I just talked about.
Yeah, and it's astounding that anybody would walk away from that deal. But
well, they always say they can't afford it. I've heard this many times. But you can't afford to turn down free money. So that's an example. And another example is people are keeping money in bank accounts, CDs, money market funds, savings accounts, literally earning zero. And it's going to stay that way as far as the eye can see. Now, the Fed Reserve is probably going to be raising rates maybe three times this year, which is nice, but that means what you pay on loans is going up, on credit cards, student loans, car loans, that's going up. But what you earn on deposits is not going up. That's why the banks are making so much money right now.
Well, you anticipated my next question, which is what is going to be the trend in interest rates? But these are going to be incrementally very small rises.
Well,
I
they
imagine.
Are. But, I mean, we haven't had – we had from 2008 to 2015, they didn't raise rates at all. They raised it a quarter point in December 2015. They raised it a quarter point to 2016. And now their next meeting is March 15th. I think there's a pretty good chance they may raise rates another quarter point. But I think by the end of 2017, we'll have had three interest rate increases, which is the most we've had in 10 years or so. So it's small, but it's a different direction than we've had for a very, very long time.
And
interest rates are still remarkably low, considering the economy is growing. And we're not in the emergency situation we were in 2008, 2009.
Yeah, and rates will likely stay very low. So on the subject of debt, you know, we have a lot of people in the audience that are college age. Maybe they come here to spend some time
sure.
over the ski season. Or we have parents that have kids that are about to head out to college. You know, one of the major hits for anybody these days, college tuition has gone up so dramatically. The whole college loan situation, and what advice — I've got two questions for you, and I'll give them both to you at the same time. What advice do you have for young people as they're about to embark on that journey on balancing student loans? And what about parents that are also trying to balance? They want to help out, but yet they have to plan for their own retirement. So let's talk
exactly.
about both those subjects.
So I did a book on this, came out last year, called The Ultimate Guide to Student Loans. And there's a website, theultimateguidetostudentloans.com. And by the way, all these things I'm talking about are at my website, moneyanswers.com. And the solution is to save up front, starting from birth. You can't do it in utero, by the way. You've got to get a Social Security number, so you can't do it that. But you got to, once they come out, you can start saving for them. And the more you can save up front, the less you have to borrow when they get to school. But a lot of people don't do that, or they do a very minimal amount. They have to borrow a huge amount. And you're right, they're loading the students with huge amounts of debt. The parents are maxing out on what's called parent plus loans. And then on top of that, they do home equity loans, and they borrow against their 401k and their life insurance. Anything that's not tacked down, they're going to borrow against, is what happens. And now the latest trend, Doug, is that grandparents are being asked to put money in for their grandkids' college. So grandparents are now taking from their 401ks and IRAs and home equity loans to pay for the grandkids, because the parents are maxed out and the kids are maxed out. It's totally ridiculous. The average person is graduating with $38,000 in student loan debt these days. That's the average. And a lot of people, $50,000, $100,000, $150,000 undergraduate. And then if you add graduate school, business school, law school, medical school, dental school, that's another $200,000, $300,000, $400,000. I've been speaking around the country to a lot of dentists recently, and you go through 8 years of dental school, you're typically going to have $400,000 to $500,000 in dental school loans on top of your undergraduate before you get your first job. It's just insane what's going on out there.
And then they have to go out and start a small business. You know, the dental industry is a tough business for dentists.
Yeah, it's changed a lot, because in the past, what they would have done is graduated from dental school, join a practice, and eventually take over the practice. But they're so indebted today, the older dentists don't want them, is what it comes down to, because they're more of a burden. So there's a whole new group, which is what's called dental service organizations, or DSOs, where they buy up dental practices and hire dentists out of dental school. So people become employees, they do not become owners, and therefore they don't have equity in practices the way they did in the past, because of the amount of debt that people have coming out of dental school. This whole student loan situation, there's $1.4 trillion in student loans outstanding, is changing the whole face of America here, because people are getting out of school with these huge debts, and they can't buy cars and start
so
families.
Jordan, that's the problem. Let's talk about the advice side of things. So what do you tell parents whose kids are facing high tuition, but mom and dad still, you know, they're high earning now. They've got 10 years maybe until they're going to retire. So what do you tell people as far as balancing?
I mean, don't strip your retirement money for your kids' colleges as much as you might want to do it, because you can't recover. The kid can recover over time with earnings. But if you're in your 50s and you have 10 years to go, you don't have time to recover if you've cleaned out your retirement income, which is what a lot of people do. So as difficult as that may be, you've got to hold on to your own. Because chances are you're going to live 30, 40 years in retirement, and if all your money went to the college, you have nothing left, which is what's happening.
Jordan, I want to emphasize that, and then I know Larry's got a question for you. But, you know, the temptation is to help your kid as much as you can.
Yeah.
But probably the best gift you can give your kids, you know, once you've gotten them educated, you've passed their values on, now they're about to head off to college. At that point, the best gift you can give your kids is to make sure you are financially independent in retirement and you don't become a burden to them. It's
that
really
happens all the time.
It's really hard, but that's why student loans are out there for young people. And averaging $38,000 in student debt, it's a lot of money. There's no doubt about it. But to set yourself on a path where maybe you're going to be making double of what you would have made if you didn't go to college, that doesn't sound crazy. Where I think people maybe make some bad choices is when they decide to go into a field that's not going to pay a lot, which is great. The world needs social workers are doing wonderful work, but they don't make a lot of money. Teachers doing really important work. Again, they don't make a lot of money. And so don't get yourself into $200,000 or $300,000 of student loan debt if your ultimate job that you want doesn't pay much, because you just won't be able to make the numbers work. But getting
people
back to the parents.
You're right.
Back to the parents.
Specific advice to help you. First of all, people don't realize you can refinance your student loans once you've come out to much lower interest rates, typically in the 2-3% range. Federal loans today are about 5.5%, parent loans 6%. Private loans, 10%, you know, much, much higher rate. So, for example, there's a place called Credible, C-R-E-D-I-B-L-E. The website for that, credible.com, and then put /money answers. I know it's me. You get a little better deal that way. They've got about 5 or 6 places that you can shop around to get the best deal to refinance those student loans to about 2%. So it doesn't get rid of them altogether, but at least you pay them off quicker at a lower interest rate. The other thing you can do is consolidate them, the federal consolidation program. A website for that would be consolidatecollege.com. So you have one bill to pay at a lower rate instead of a whole bunch of different ones. And then there's something called the Income-Based Repayment Program, the IBR program, where if you meet certain criteria, after a certain amount of time, your student loans can be forgiven. So, for example, if you work in the nonprofit sector, 501c3 of some kind, if you work for the government, state, local, federal, post office, anything like that, if you like are a doctor and you work on an Indian reservation, there's a whole bunch of different ways of doing it. Then indeed, you can, after say 10 years of paying the minimum in your student loans, have them completely forgiven. So that can help people to some extent as well. And that website I just gave you, consolidatecollege.com, can help you figure out if you qualify for that IBR program. So these aren't going away altogether. And by the way, you cannot get rid of student loans even in bankruptcy. There's only two loans you can't get rid of, student loans and IRS debt. So you can't skip out of them. They'll haunt you to the grave, actually. So there's a little bit of advice to help people.
Yeah, and the retirement plan of last resort is Social Security, which everybody gets. But it's A, neither terribly generous. It covers the basics, maybe. But also, is its future uncertain? Trump has said, he's not going to mess with entitlements, but
you've
got to think somebody will.
Because that's where the money is, okay? You can cut out the National Endowment of the Humanities all you like. It's not even a rounding error, okay? Mm-hmm. The government basically does three things. It's an insurance company that pays Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid. It does defense, and it pays interest on the national debt. The rest of it's almost a rounding error when you get down to it. So without hitting entitlements, the deficit's just going to keep going up. And because demographically, the baby boomers are now hitting retirement age, every day 10,000 baby boomers turn 65, they're collecting Medicare, Security, that's where the money is. Okay, so not touching entitlements is not the way to cut the budget deficit, you know, in a significant way. So I agree with you. Social Security is always supposed to have been a supplement. It's never supposed to be primary. 40% of the people receiving Social Security, it is their only source of income. They have not saved a dime. It was never designed to be that way at all. And something like 60% is 90% of their income. So a lot of people just are not saving enough because their expenses are too high, or they went spending, or they spent it on credit card interest, whatever it may be. So we have a huge retirement savings crisis in this country, and every day more and more people are getting to retirement, not keeping their jobs anymore. They don't have close to enough to live a decent retirement.
Jordan, we've only got time for one more question, and I guess what I'd like your thoughts on and to share with the audience is talk about how to plan for the unexpected.
Well, I mean, there's lots of things that are unexpected. Certainly insurance is part of it. I mean, life insurance and those kind of things are, you have to have that because you don't expect to die until you do. So you have to have, there's basically five insurances. There's life insurance, health insurance, property casualty like your home, there's long-term care and disability. And you've got to be covered in all five areas to do that. And then you've got to have savings on the side. And we talked about saving retirement, but you've got to have a cash fund on the side earning something for you, because otherwise, you know, something hits and you're up against the wall pretty badly. I'll tell you, we've talked before about how savings accounts are going to earn zero pretty much. I'll tell you where I'm putting money. It's a nice, safe place that earns a decent amount. I'm doing what are called commercial mortgage bridge loans, and there's a way of earning 6% very safely over a one-year time frame. You get your money back after a year. A website for that, commercialmortgagebridgeloans.com, because a lot of people, I think the last numbers I saw, $10 trillion sitting in cash, CDs, money funds, savings accounts, earning nothing. That's kind of pathetic. The banks love it because they're paying nothing, but for the average consumer, they should be earning something on their cash.
Very fine. Jordan, thanks for joining us this morning. We've been talking with America's Money Answers man, Jordan Goodman, and you were out here for Sundance. What did you think of our little town?
Much. It was great. It's wonderful. I've been there before. It's a wonderful place. A lot of fancy real estate around there, I must say. It's doing very, very, very well. It was a really wonderful time. I'm always glad to take emails, by the way, from your listeners at moneyanswers.com is my website.
Terrific. Okay, thanks so much for joining us.
And very good. Thank you both.
You bet. And when we come back, we're going to be talking with the tax man, Bill Brunson, from the Internal Revenue Service. But first, let's take a look at this weather. It's expecting upwards of 7 inches today. 3 to 7 is the range they give, but I think we've got 3 down there already, and it's going to snow most of the rest of the day. And listen to this, the low tonight, 4 degrees. 4 degrees. Tomorrow, more snow, 50 to 80% chance. And it's going to be pretty windy tomorrow as well. So, yes, not only will it be cold, but it will be windy as well. Roads are slippery. Be careful out there. No closures that we know of. None have been reported. None are on the UDOT website. So it's clear sailing, just slower than normal. And we will be back to talk with Bill Brunson from the Internal Revenue Service after this.
This is Chris Robinson with Berkshire Hathaway Home Services, Utah Properties. KPCW is one of the many nonprofits our agents and companies support. They are the backbone of Summit and Wasatch counties in our incredible community. More info at bhhsutah.com.
This is Eric Lee, attorney in the Park City office of Jones Waldo. As a Park City resident for 20 years, I'm proud to support KPCW. Jones Waldo provides legal services to residents of Summit County in many areas. 435-200-0085, joneswaldo.com.
Welcome back to Mound Money on this snowy day. Larry was given the forecast on the roads. It is worthwhile pointing out, I just went on the UDOT website, and they say chains or 4x4 vehicles required to come back up I-80, so eastbound on I-80. So just be aware of that. Our next guest is going to be Bill Brunson with the Internal Revenue Service. Bill, welcome back to Mound Money.
Larry, Doug, thank you for having us.
So the calendar has flipped over. We're now in 2017. Most people have their W-2s in place. What are some changes that people should know about regarding filing their taxes this year?
Well, to start with, people have a few more days to submit their tax return through April 18th, Tuesday, April 18th. So that's a couple more days that they get to put all their paperwork together and hopefully choose to electronically file. And more Utahns choose to electronically file. The IRS expects 1.2 million Utahns to submit a federal tax return. Of that number, 1.1 million, or 90%, are going to choose to electronically file. And there's benefits to that.
And what are some of those benefits?
One would be the speed. 48 hours or less after you've transmitted your return, the Internal Revenue Service will let you know, acknowledge receipt, and then if there's an issue, they'll let you know that where you'd have to resubmit it, or they will continue to process it. If you choose to electronically file and you have a refund coming and choose direct deposit, then you can expect a refund in approximately 21 days or less. 9 out of 10 Utahns will receive a refund in 21 days or less if they electronically file and choose direct deposit. Another item is the accuracy of the return. The software that exists today for folks to do their tax return for 2016 will literally lead you by the hand. It will ask you the questions and make sure that you have all the attachments and forms and schedules and does all the math calculations for you so you can't make an error there. It's almost error-free, 99.5% or better, if you choose to electronically file. And all Utahns can go to irs.gov, our website, and they can click on that free file icon and submit their federal income tax return for free.
Very fine. Now, if your return is more complicated than using a TurboTax or something like that, IRS is has lots of experience with crooked tax preparers, I'm sure. So how do you look for a tax preparer who is legitimate and will do a good job for you?
Well, you want to keep in mind that these people can, as you say, help you or they can hurt you. So when you choose a tax preparer, you want to look for things that would say tell you up front that they are a quality preparer. Someone that's going to be around after the filing season in case you have questions or you get a letter in the mail from the IRS. You can check a tax preparer's history by going to the Better Business Bureau. If they're a certified public accountant, you can check with the State Board of Accountancy. For attorneys, you can check with the State Bar Association. If they happen to be what they refer to as an enrolled agent, then there's information on IRS.gov about these individuals. And the IRS has an area on its website where, depending upon your needs, it will help you select a local qualified preparer. So there's information there on IRS.gov. Another item you want to be careful or be aware of, rather, are fees. The charge that individual wants from you for doing your return, that fee, should be based on services rendered, not the amount of refund that they can get back for you. The amount of refund that they can get back for you lends to padding and cheating and other areas. And it's also a violation of a ethical code for preparers. It's outlined in our Circular 230. So when you discuss the fees with the preparer, once again, not on refunds, not on the amount that they can get back, but on services that they're going to provide to you. A good preparer should also ask a gazillion questions, Larry. They're going to want to know things about that particular financial year that you just passed through. So they're going to want to know how many children you have. They're going to want to know whether you're self-employed. They're going to want to see your W-2s, your 1099s. They should not accept the last pay stub of the year. They should request the W-2. Also, a preparer is required by law to sign the return. And they should have a preparer tax identification number that they will put on the return that they receive from the Internal Revenue Service that they get on an annual basis that they pay for. Now, a big red flag for folks would be never sign a blank return. So if you have a preparer that wants you to sign a blank return, that's not a good item. So you want to be aware of that. And finally, I would say that you need to review the information on that return before you sign it, because you are responsible for that information. So if it shows that you're paying a home mortgage but you're a renter, that would be a flag. Or let's say that you're an employee that goes in and out of work every day, but you don't have a side job where you have expenses, and all of a sudden you've got expenses for a side job on your return, that's a big red flag. So review that return carefully before you sign it. Things like that will help you get a good preparer as opposed to a bad one.
Good advice. One thing I'd add to finding a good preparer is you want somebody that has insurance behind their firm, because if they made a mistake, oftentimes that firm will pay the fine, and you want to make sure they have the financial resources to do that. You know, one other thing, you talked about fees, and I'm glad to hear that taking a percent of the refund is outlined as being unethical by the professional groups. It should be. Frankly, I'm surprised it's not illegal. It sounds like it's not illegal. It's just unjust. It's unethical. But another big fee that's been going on for over a decade now is these cash advances. So you have a refund due you, and Bill, if I heard you right, if it's electronically deposited, you can plan on getting that refund in 21 days.
Or less.
It is shocking to me the fees that are associated with getting you that refund in advance. It's basically a cash advance. And huge, huge fees associated with doing that. Is this on the radar screen of the IRS? Are they working diligently to try to get people their money more quickly so that they don't have to do these cash advances?
We always try to provide the best service possible, but taxpayers need to keep in mind that we do need to review what they submit and in an expeditious manner so that it doesn't lend itself to a falsely filed tax return, so that it's a fine balance in essence, where people file a return, and if they have overpaid, we want to get them their money as soon as possible, but we do need some checks and balances within the system. So 21 days or less is where we're currently at. And if a person can hold off on that 21-day period and hold off from going to, say, a private business that offers them a loan in advance of their refund, then there's not going to be any additional out-of-pocket expense. The individual needs to be aware of what it is that they are engaging in. And the Internal Revenue Service is saying, choose to electronically file and direct deposit, and 9 out of 10 Utahns will receive a refund within 21 days or less. That's a pretty good deal right there.
Okay, and let's, on the subject of returns, you know, there's a scam that's been going on for a while now. Kind of the first to file is the one that gets the return. And unfortunately, fraudsters are out there filing fake returns for other people. If they have your Social Security number, I understand that's pretty much all they need to do to file these fake returns. What's the IRS doing to protect people from those scams?
Well, we put some filters in place. For this year, we delayed the earned income tax credit and the advanced child tax credit refunds up and through February 15th. The PATH Act required that we not issue any refunds in that area, which then allowed the IRS to check these two areas where there has been fraud on a consistent basis. The IRS also recommends various items to taxpayers. A lot of people go out there on the social network and they're not careful with their personal information. So be conscious of that. If you go to a coffee shop, you should have and you're using a computer and you're enjoying your coffee or tea or whatever, you want to make sure that site where you're at is encryptable. In other words, the folks at the coffee shop with that free Wi-Fi should give you a password. At home, you should have some sort of on your computer software that prevents scammers from coming in, antivirus software. It should be software that is automatically updated because the tax scammers, once again, continue to update their game. You also want to have on your Wi-Fi at home, if you're using Wi-Fi at home, a secure network. You don't know what your neighbor's doing next door. He could or she could be listening electronically to everything you're doing on your computer. So common sense things. Just don't throw your personal financial information away in the dumpster. Shred it. Don't carry your Social Security card around with you in case you lose your wallet or your purse gets snatched. Things along those lines. But you have to be careful in all areas. But still, there's bad guys out there, and they're very good at what they do. And if you do have a problem in this area, the IRS has a special unit that we will work with individuals so that we can resolve the issue for the current year, and then in any future years, we could issue you another special number other than your Social Security number that the bad guys don't have. And when you file your return, we know it's you.
Can people request that? Can you do that in a preventative as opposed to a responsive nature?
We have done some pilots on this. I don't have a specific yes or no answer for you, but I would recommend that your listeners go to IRS.gov and key in tax fraud and see what we have for personal identifiable numbers that can be issued to them in lieu of a Social Security number. I'm looking along the lines that the individual would have to have some reason or need that they feel that they are going to be subject to this sort of identity theft. If you've not had the problem in the past and you haven't changed anything recently, then you shouldn't have a problem in the future. That doesn't mean that you won't, but once again, go to IRS.gov and check and see what all the items that are there under identity theft that are offered to you currently.
Okay, well, good advice always, Bill Brunson from the Internal Revenue Service. Appreciate your call this morning. We're out of time, but again, all the answers you're probably looking for or stumped by are at IRS.gov. Thanks, Bill.
Larry, Doug, thank you.
And when we come back, we're going to be talking about mindful cuisine. That's after this.
This is Brooks, commercial lender for Mountain West Bank. We are proud to support Mountain Money on KPCW, but not responsible for the opinions of Larry or Doug. Our community is unique, and so are Park City businesses. We offer loan solutions to help your business succeed. Mountain West Bank, Kearns Boulevard, next to the theaters. 649-3369, Division of Glacier Bank, Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Gordo here.
And I'm Larry with All Resort Group, a proud sponsor of KPCW.
Since 1974, we've been part of this community with shared ride, private van, and SUV service for our customers.
Reservations available at allresort.com or 649-3999.
We move people.
Welcome back to Mountain Money. Larry, that was a little financially heavy first part of the show. First talking about savings and investing and then our taxes. We're going to lighten up the show now. In studio with us now is Linda Elbert. She is the owner of Mindful Cuisine. Linda, tell us about your business.
Okay. Well, I moved here to Utah about a year and a half ago and decided I wanted to continue my business, Mindful Cuisine, that I'd started in California. So I remodeled my house and kitchen to create a kitchen classroom space. And I teach cooking classes in that kitchen space. Right now, I'm doing about one class a week, and the classes are on the website.
What kind of cooking? Is it more fancy cooking, or is it day-to-day cooking?
It's kind of a little bit of both. Okay, I like to teach people. I like to do lots of different things, and I like to. We prepare a meal, we'll use some recipes, but I really try to teach people what's common about these recipes? What are the methods? What are the flavors? And how can you change it up to make it your own? So you can use it on a regular basis.
So give us an example. What's some classes? We're almost at the end of February. What's some classes, focuses that you've got coming up in March?
Okay. Well, my first one in March is called Casual Entertaining. And I was thinking about March Madness and just parties that people might be having. So we're making a whole bunch of appetizers and in that class.
That sounds like one Bob Hendricks and I should take.
So a lot of just kind of fun food. Later on in the month, I should have looked this up, what else am I teaching? We're doing, God, I'm just completely drawing a blank. Last week, we did a Moroccan class, okay? And we used a tagine, which is a conical kind of dish that you can, that you braise in, although you could do it in a regular old Dutch oven. And we made chicken with pomegranates and tamarind and all kinds of different spices.
So you're cutting across all nationalities with food.
Yeah, yeah.
So. You're not a French chef. You're not a Moroccan chef or a Greek.
No.
It's all just food.
Right. It kind of my I really like to cook lots of different things. And that's kind of why I've chosen to do what I do. Like if you work in a restaurant, you make what's on the menu and you do that every single day. And I love that I can explore all different sorts of things.
Yeah. And the name, Mindful Cuisine. What does mindful mean in terms of cuisine?
Okay. Well, that's kind of a big deal to me. When I was in culinary school, I did go to a traditional French school. But while I was there, I started reading a lot about food production in our country. And one of the things that kind of struck me is that just like we have animals that are going extinct, we have a lot of crops and a lot of farm animal breeds, food-related things that are going extinct because they weren't picked up by the industrial agricultural system. So I really like to think about cooking with local products so you reduce food miles, seasonal products. And then there's lots of groups around the country that are trying to restore a lot of, or at least keep alive, these heirloom products, you could call them, things that are going extinct because they're not in wide-scale production.
It's important because if you're going to cook, cooking takes a lot of time, right? That's a negative, and it's a labor of love.
Mm-hmm.
And so day-to-day cooking, like I've got two teenage daughters, and, just family cooking is just work for either my wife or I.
Uh-huh.
But if you're going to go through the effort to learn to cook and come in and take a class, you want to do something that you're passionate behind. And I can see this sustainable model, which is what I would describe just mentioned, that's mindful approach, gives people kind of a purpose. Why am I putting in all this effort and work? Are most of your students coming as couples and as friends, or do most people come as individuals?
It's really a mixture of both. It's really both. And, one of the things that I found, because I did do this in California before I moved here, was that people initially came because they thought I'd like to cook better. But then they kept on coming because cooking with others, it sort of took that aloneness, that labor-intensive feel away, and it was really fun to sit down and cook with others and eat with others, and they came back time and time again just because it was a really fun thing to do. So.
Yeah, actually, my wife and I have started cooking together at least once a week, have a nice fancy meal, and it's as much fun to just be in the kitchen working on it as
you should occasionally invite the various radio co-hosts that you have to enjoy some of these meals with you.
You think so? Okay. Well, you missed a good chicken marsala on Saturday night, but that's neither here nor there. You have an interesting journey, which is that cooking may have been a passion for some time, but you actually have a PhD in a wildly different field.
Yes, I do.
So talk briefly about that and why you left that career for this one.
Okay. Well, my very first career was as a speech and language pathologist, and I worked with children. But I always was interested in psychology. So eventually I decided to get my PhD in clinical psychology. And I was a real, like, highly focused young person. I finished high school a year early. I finished my master's degree by the time I was 21. And then I went and got a PhD. And I work in my PhD was probably shaped by my speech pathology career because it was in neuropsychology. And I worked with adults and kids with head injuries. So it was a really, really serious job. And I really loved it. I had no intention of changing my career. But when my own kids grew up, I had a little bit of free time. And, well, what are you going to do? Free time. So I thought, I'll go to culinary school. There's one in my town. I think this would be really fun. And I just wanted to give better dinner parties. You know, I really had no intention of changing my career. And I fell in love with it. And I realized that after having this really, really serious career for about 30 years, I wanted to play. I wanted to have fun. So I gradually closed my practice and started doing this.
Well, and Park City's a fun place. If you want to play, this is a great place to come. I'm curious, how is the business environment for you here different than where you came from in California? Where was that in California, and how's running that business here in Park City different?
Well, you know, I was from Laguna Beach. And in many ways, I feel like Laguna Beach is a lot like Park City.
Park City with an ocean.
With an ocean, yeah. I mean, it's kind of, yeah. So it's similar in that respect. You know, you have a lot of tourism and things like that. So the difference was I'd lived in Laguna Beach for a long, long time, and I knew a lot of people. And so I didn't really have to market. And so learning how to market my business is a whole new deal for me. So.
And is this a crowded space here? Because we see quite a few catering companies and cooking class businesses pop up.
I would not say any more than in Laguna, no.
Okay.
And yeah. Give us an idea. What is an average class cost? Do people sign up for a class or do they sign up for a series? And then do you have a website? How can people learn more?
Okay. I do have a website, so... And it explains that. And right now,
that was a ripe opportunity to give a plug.
Yes.
So the name of it is?
What is that website?
That website is www.mindfulcuisine.com. So that's
an average cost for a
average
class?
Average cost is around $80 a class. And the class enrollment is no more than 10 people. Everybody cooks, and then we sit down and eat together. So it's like going out to dinner, but you cook the meal yourself. So
that sounds like a lot of fun.
It is a lot of fun. And then one other thing I wanted to say is I do have classes that are like scheduled on the calendar, but because people are in town for, you know, a discrete period of time, you can also call and say, "Hey, I'd like to take that class, but it doesn't work for my schedule. Can I do it? Can you set up a special time for my group?"
Yeah.
So.
Yeah,
excellent. Well, our guest has been Linda Elbert. She's the owner of Mindful Cuisine at mindfulcuisine.com. Linda, thank you for joining us this morning.
Thank you.
And we will be back to wrap up Mountain Money after this.
Mountain Money on KPCW is sponsored in part by Columbus Pacific Properties, presenting Viridian, 21 new residences along the 11th fairway of the Canyons Golf Course with year-round amenities and gondola access. Summers on the fairway, winters on the slopes. More information at ViridianParkCity.com.
Additional funding for programming on KPCW has been provided in part by AMA Waterways and Park City Air, Cruise, and Travel, 565-4730, ParkCityAirCruiseAndTravel.com. Park City Bike Demos, Kearns Boulevard next to Adolph's, ParkCityBikeDemos.com. Long, Reimer, Weininger, Bepler, Estate Planning, Family Law, LRW-Law.com. And the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and listeners like you.
Welcome back to the final 5 minutes of Mountain Money. Fabulous day to be out skiing. Just fresh snow, and it continues to fall. Might get up to 6 or 7 inches before this tapers off later. Could snow into tomorrow with some windy conditions. And, Doug, we haven't had a show, really, for 3 weeks.
At the holiday?
Because 2 weeks ago... Yeah, 2 weeks ago was Pledge Drive, and then President's last Monday. So I haven't had a chance to review with listeners, except on Randy's show, results of Pledge Drive. We said if you could pledge $125,000 to keep us going, we would cut the drive to 4 days. We did. By the end of the drive, we had $132,000 in the kitty. So we blew past our goal slightly, and very encouraging.
Thank you to everybody in Park City. This is a great town.
Thanks to everybody who called, and it was nearly 800 callers. So we thank you for that, and we picked up five new members of the Broadcasters Club. And
remind our listeners, what's the goal behind the Broadcasters Club?
The goal behind the Broadcasters Club is to have a steady amount of money that we can count on year in, year out. It's money that our biggest expense is local programming. So it allows us to hire, we have been able to hire an extra reporter based on income from the Broadcasters Club. And you heard Jordan Goodman in the front of the show saying that the new presidential budget is going to cut out the humanities in terms of funding, National Endowment for the Humanities. That is not our funding source, but we have a similar funding source for the national funds we get.
It's important for the radio station to be financially healthy. I know the Corporation for Public Broadcasting does provide some of the revenue or income.
It's $151,000 comes from a federal source, and that is constantly under attack by conservatives.
We just need to make sure we have healthy foundations for the other sources, which is primarily underwriting and then listener support. So it's a really important part. And I'm always proud, Larry, of the job that you and your team do here, and equally proud of the town and the support. I also want to take a quick moment to thank our guests this morning. They include the Money Answer Man, Jordan Goodman, Bill Brunson of the IRS, who's a frequent guest here. Thank you, Bill. And Linda Elbert, who's new in Park City, and her business is Mindful Cuisine.
Indeed. And while we're thanking people, let's thank our sponsors. You know, and before I get to that, back to Pledge Drive, I also want to thank not just those who called in and the staff who puts on a Herculean effort to pull this off every 6 months, but I also want to thank all those great merchants who donate product that entices people to give it a higher level, maybe, so that they can
get it.
We're
one of the few public radio stations that do that.
Yeah, and it just helps everybody. It gets new customers in businesses that because you had a coupon for lunch, you're maybe trying a place you hadn't tried before, and you might find that you really like them.
Well, let's thank our underwriters, because I want to come back and just talk about, you know, the Pledge Drive is all live, and I want to circle back to that before we close the show.
Okay, well, I want to thank our great sponsors like Mountain West Bank, Berkshire Hathaway Home Services, Utah Property, San Francisco Design, Jones Waldo, Holbrook and McDonough, All Resort Group, Park City Mountain, and Apex Residences and Viridian Park City Columbus Pacific Properties. And without them, we wouldn't be able to do this show.
Well, we're talking about a healthy foundation, and those underwriters play a very key role. About half of the station's budget comes from underwriting. But Larry, getting back to live, you know, the Pledge Drive was, there was a lot of live talk on radio. You guys did a great job. I was watching a live event last night. It was so much fun. It was the Oscars. People have heard about this, but just to see them give the Oscar to the wrong best movie at the end, I almost went to bed like 15 minutes early. It's like, well, I'll read in the morning who got it. It was so much fun to experience that live.
I just am astounded that an accounting firm, which is known for getting every penny right, gets...
Well, the accounting firm got it right. They gave Warren Beatty, thank you, the wrong card, unfortunately.
Well, however it came out.
But Jimmy Kimmel was so funny. You know, he blamed somebody else. He blamed himself. He did a really nice job.
Yeah. Okay, well, that's it for Mountain Money for this Monday. Thanks so much for joining us. This is KPCW Park City. We are under a winter weather advisory through 4 a.m. on Tuesday. Time now for NPR.